case this morning is Renetics v. Cisco, 2019-16-71. Mr. Timofeyev again.
Pitching both ends of a doubleheader today.
He did. Your Honor, and may it please the Court. As we said in our Rule 28J letter, our view is that the result of this Court's recent Mangrove decision, the issues in this case are now narrowed to whether the Board was correct to find Claim 18 of the 135 patent to be obvious under the combination of Solana and Kiyuchi. And we submit that decision was erroneous for two reasons.
Okay. Just before you go any further, I just want to make sure we know what's at stake. Until you filed your 28J letter, you thought you were challenging what remained of the 135 patent, that is, Claim 2 under Kiyuchi? I'm just trying to figure out which claims were the Kiyuchi-related claims and which claims are the Kiyuchi-Solana-related claims that were on appeal in your eyes before the 28J letter.
There was an overlap. Claims 1 through 4 were anticipated by Kiyuchi. Claims also 1 through 5 were found obvious under Kiyuchi and Solana. Our view is that subsequent to the Mangrove decision, we think that, and there were some claims like 5, 8, and 9 that were obvious under different combinations of Kiyuchi. So we think that after Mangrove decision, really our view is that this is now limited to Claim 18. There was some question about Claim 2, but we think that, you know, the fair reading just based on that claim is this appeal is now just about Claim 18.
Okay.
If that answers your question.
And so it's just Claim 18 and just Kiyuchi Solana as the grounds for possibly rejecting Claim 18.
That is correct, Judge Chan. And just one maybe nuance is, you know, some of the arguments were made as to why the board was wrong with respect to, you know, the way it mapped, you know, the proxies onto the client computers, which were with respect to the Kiyuchi anticipation rejections. We then, as I think we made clear in our blue brief, also in fact the board's analysis of a Solana Kiyuchi. So there is some intersection of the arguments, but we're not, because Mangrove decided that that Kiyuchi discloses the direct communication VPN, we're no longer arguing kind of those subsidiary points with respect to the anticipation rejections under Kiyuchi, even though they may be relevant to whether the board was correct in finding obviousness under Solana and Kiyuchi.
Okay, thank you.
Of course. So with respect to that Solana-Kiyuchi combination, we submit that the board departed. The first error was for the board to depart radically from the examiner's basis for rejection. Because both Cisco and the examiner relied on Solana as the reference disclosing the generating limitation in step one of Claim 18. They relied upon Kiyuchi only as a modification of Solana for steps 2 and 3, which are the determining and then requesting access limitation. After Renetics identified various problems with this reliance on Solana, the board switched the thrust of the rejections. And at the point that even if Solana does not, open quote, disclose generating a DNS request, close quote, Kiyuchi discloses that feature. This is at Appendix 28.
So then, in your view, did the board convert the 103 into essentially a 102 Kiyuchi-based rejection?
We think the board still conducted an obviousness analysis, but a deficient obviousness analysis, which is our second argument.
Because I thought for steps 2 and 3, you said that the board was relying on Kiyuchi.
Yes, the board was relying on Kiyuchi as modifying Solana.
Right.
But then for respect to step 1, the board essentially, when we raised the issues and, you know, showed in our view that that step was not obvious under Solana, even, you know, in view of Kiyuchi, the board essentially pivoted to Kiyuchi as the principal reference disclosing that claim. And that was an entire new, a shift from how Cisco advocated the from Cisco's request, and it was also a shift from the examiner's RAN. So we believe that it was a materially new rejection, and the board, we had no opportunity to respond to it. We think what is proper here is a vacature and remand to the board, in particular so the board can analyze that Solana-Kiyuchi combination In light of the intervening guidance from this court in its first Mangrove decision and also from the board itself in its Mangrove decision on remand, because those decisions made clear that Kiyuchi's proxies cannot be mapped onto the client, the claimed client computer and the target computer, yet here the board relied on these Kiyuchi proxies as disclosing the claimed client computer and the target computer as associated with the DNS request in Claim 1.
What is left of the Kiyuchi Solana for Claim 18? Oh, I guess you still have that final limitation in Claim 18.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes,
so what would happen theoretically if we affirmed your prior appeal on Claim 18? Then what would happen to this appeal?
I think this appeal then becomes moot because, again, our view is only Claim 18 is at issue here. So this appeal is moot. I mean, as I, you know, my answer to Judge Bryson in the prior appeal, again, I think, you know, the proper course is to, you know, to dismiss the appeal or to remand it to the PTO with instructions to vacate the decision as moot with respect to Claim 18. But we do acknowledge that then this appeal would become moot if the prior appeal, 1523, is, you know, is affirmed.
I believe the other side said that you somehow, is this the appeal, I'm sorry, where the other side is arguing that you've waived slash forfeited your right to make this specific argument in defending your claim because it wasn't part of your request for reconsideration to the board?
Yes, Your Honor, we...
Is that this appeal?
This is
okay.
This is this appeal. There were several ways.
And then there was a non-presidential opinion that they cited as support for that proposition, that when you choose to invoke the request for reconsideration procedure at the patent board, you must include any and all arguments that you would ultimately want to pursue on appeal to the Federal Circuit. Otherwise, you would waive such arguments.
Yes, Your Honor, we have three responses. So one, which is I think the easiest, is that even though we only challenged, I believe, Claim 4 in the rehearing request, we actually challenged everything, including Claim 18 and the arguments, the issues were presented in our blue brief, in our request, subsequent request to the director for rehearing. So when the director issued the final decision for the agency, that request to him presented all the grounds. So we think, you know, there is, you know, even under Polycom, there is no conceivable waiver. We also, Polycom is a non-precedential decision. We think there is a significant question whether, respectfully, you know, whether that is correct in these circumstances where...
Isn't Polycom isn't it a very different case? Because in that case, as I understand the somewhat complicated factual setting, the ground of rejection number one, which was at issue, mm-hmm. was never raised to the board. I mean, and that seems to me very different from saying, in that setting, yeah, you have to raise it if you want to litigate it in this court at some point, and that would have suggested raising it in the petition for rehearing at the latest. But that's very different from this case and from the great run of the cases in which a party may select one or more of the issues to focus on in a request for rehearing, not waive all the rest of the issues.
So, Judge Bryson, you actually just pushed me towards my third point, which is exactly that we argued this in our gray brief, that Polycom is distinguishable on precisely that basis. Two different anticipation, obviousness, rejections were at play. And I think this court in Polycom was concerned with a particular issue, where the board even had an opportunity to opine on a particular issue.
So, yeah, and I was unable to find any case in any jurisdiction that stood for the proposition directly that if you don't include a particular issue in your petition for rehearing in the category of cases where that is required by statute or regulation, that you've waived it. So I haven't found any. Did you find any authority for that proposition?
We have not.
I mean, Darby kind of speaks generally to this issue, but not specifically to this question.
Yeah, we think Darby does speak to the issue of the Supreme Court there, but again, in rejecting this kind of waiver basis, because we do think that, it's a feature of the Administrative Procedure Act that, as you said, Judge Bryson, if a statute requires you to seek rehearing as a condition for, you know, obtaining the final agency decision, you have to do it. Otherwise, there is waiver or forfeiture. If a statute does not, you do not have to. And I think from a policy perspective, it's just not, it would lead to a waste of agency resources, not to mention the party's resources, if every time you have to seek rehearing, you have to include every single, you know, point you want to bring up. And the standard is different. I mean, the standard for agency reconsideration, they certainly vary, but in this case, you have to show a specific point that the panel misapprehended or misunderstood. It's not a general appellate standard, you know, where the court will look, you know, at the question of law, you know, question of fact under, you know, other standards. So we just think that it's, we have doubts about Polycom, but this court doesn't even need to, you know, to consider, you know, whether Polycom, the precedential decision is binding here because it is distinguishable.
Okay.
So that's, that is our response, Judge Chen, on the waiver point. I would also mention, you know, our second argument as to why the board's analysis of a Solana Kyuichi combination needs to be vacated is because the board failed to adequately analyze the motivation to combine Solana and Kyuichi with respect to the specific, you know, features that are at issue. The board obliquely addressed the motivation to combine with respect to step 3, which is determining the DNS request in step 2 is requesting access to a secure target website. It did so on page 27. But there, as we argue in our blue brief, that analysis was faulty because Solana system provides an end-to-end confidentiality, so all communications within it are secure. And you can see that is on the appendix 2043, I believe, in the examiner's findings. So there would have been no reason for someone skilled in the art to modify Solana where all transmissions are secure to determine whether DNS is requesting access to a secure website.
Was claim 18 for your Kyuichi, for the Kyuichi Solana ground, argued separately by you, or was there one sort of representative claim for the Kyuichi Solana ground that was being debated between the parties and the board?
Glenn, I believe that in both our appeal brief to the board and also in the examiner's findings, I mean, claim 18 was analyzed in a S claim 18 on the, you know, the combination of Kyuichi and Solana. I mean, some discussion may have been, you know, done together with analysis of the other claims because I think, as you want to remark, you know, the initial free limitations are common also to claim, you know, claim 1, which is not an independent claim. I don't believe Cisco presented any arguments. I don't think the examiner addressed kind of like the separate limitation in claim 18. If this is your question, you know, Judge Chan. So, but you know, the examiner and the board looked at claim 18, you know, certainly, you know, specifically.
Your rebuttal time, you can continue or save it.
I will save it, my rebuttal time.
Mr. Foster.
Thank you, Your Honors. Theo Foster for Cisco Systems. Your Honors, the March Mangrove decision provides an alternative basis for this court to address this appeal, and we believe the proper course is to dismiss the appeal in its entirety. The reasoning for that, I think, counsel for Frenetics has acknowledged that the Mangrove decision disposed of Claim 1 and the dependent claims, and those are no longer at issue in this case. Claim 18 merely recites the same limitations as the combined Claim 1, Claim 2, and Claim 5 that the board had found either anticipated by Kyuichi or obvious over Kyuichi in view of Dalton.
But Claim 5 does not depend from Claim 2. It depends from Claim 1. So technically, the invalidation of Claims 1, 2, and 5 don't get you there to necessarily conclude that a combination of all three claims is also invalid.
Judge Chen, you're correct. Claim 5 does not depend from Claim 2, but the Claim 2 was found anticipated by Kyuichi. Claim 2 also depends from Claim 1, and so we believe that the collective findings there of the teachings of Kyuichi plus Dalton...
Did you send a 28J letter?
We did not send...
When did you learn about the Mangrove decision from March 2023?
We learned about the Mangrove decision not long after it issued. We only learned that...
That would have been an opportunity to file a 28J letter and then spell out this theory of collateral estoppel for Claim 18.
Yes, Your Honor. The reason we did not is because we have taken a slightly different position than the patent owner in this case regarding when the decision from the Federal Circuit is considered to be final after all appeals. And patent owner had indicated to us that they plan to seek cert review of that Mangrove decision. And they only just filed and provided their briefing on that cert petition to us last week. And so we didn't have an opportunity to see that they had abandoned any challenge to the merits of the Kiyuchi rejections that were affirmed in Mangrove. And so there was not time. I was around the same time that we received the Rule 28J letter last week, I was realizing that with their filing of and the issues they had attempted or had put into their cert petition that they were waiving their invalidity merits with respect to Kiyuchi.
So you're saying the position you're taking this morning springs from their 28J letter, which was just filed late last week?
Yes, Your Honor. And in combination with their petition for cert to the Supreme Court, which I believe was just filed the week before but was not docketed at the court and made available to us until last week.
How does that cert petition influence your willingness or unwillingness to take the position you're taking today?
Your Honor, in their cert petition, they contest only a few procedural matters, and they are no longer disputing that Kiyuchi anticipates the claims on the merits. They're disputing whether or not they've received a proper direct review from the patent office. And so it's not terribly unlike the situation that arose between Vernetics and Apple several years ago, and there was a dispute as to whether or not the availability of a cert petition would preserve Apple's ability to argue invalidity in re-examination. And Apple had argued that because it still maintained a possibility of seeking cert review of the entirety of its trial case, that it was not subject to estoppel from the inter partes re-examination that it was pursuing. And we had understood substantially the same sort of position. And so it wasn't until we saw their cert petition abandoning those invalidity arguments on the merits that we saw Mangrove as...
Could you address the question of whether you think that the decision in the March Mangrove case affects the validity of the board's conclusion with respect to the client computer construction issue?
Sure. I would first answer that I think this court can affirm, although in view of the procedural setting, it's not necessary, but this court could affirm the board's decision even though it did not adopt that construction of client computer as a user's computer, because on the record here and the arguments...
The board did not
have the benefit of, I believe, either of the Mangrove decisions. But certainly not the benefit of this March's Mangrove.
So really, why wouldn't the proper course be simply to send it back to the board to make the determination as to whether that question ends up resolving the case?
Well,
as opposed to our struggling with a construction that is arguably incorrect now in light of the March Mangrove case, to decide that nonetheless that the decision can be affirmed.
Well, Your Honor, first, we would dispute that construction is incorrect, but...
Would you? Well, that's what I was hoping you would tell me. Why do you think, and as I understand it, the Mangrove case essentially says, comes down with a construction, and the board declined to construe the term. Why isn't that a distinction that is at least the board, telling the board that it has to come take another shot at client computer?
Well, Your Honor, remanding for the board to take another shot in this instance, I think would essentially be moot because it's a question of what is the board going to do except adopt the analysis of Kiyuchi, the same reference that was it issued in the Mangrove decision.
Which is different from the analysis that it used before.
It would be a different analysis, but it's right. The same outcome, still leading to anticipation of Claim 1 and various dependent claims by Kiyuchi.
Yeah.
So
But that's the part that would require us to do the work that arguably ought to be done by the board in light of the correction of the claim construction. But you were saying before, I think, that you didn't think that the board's claim construction is wrong.
Yes, Your Honor, I was saying
of failing to construe is wrong in light of what we've held.
Your Honor, we believe that the construction affirmed in the Mangrove decision in March is not correct. We would point to the specification.
So you think that our decision in March was wrong with respect to the construction of client computer, and what should we do about that since we can't overturn the decision made in March?
Yes, Your Honor, I understand that as a panel decision.
So let's assume for the purpose that we'll take the decision in March as being correct. Okay?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, the question then is, that means that what the board did is wrong, correct?
That means that the board's...
On that issue, on the client computer issue.
That means that the board's analysis here, the board's decision not to formally construe client computer and to read the limitations from the specification into the claim about user's computer, that the board's analysis with respect to that is inconsistent, which, to use your term, I will say wrong, under the Mangrove decision.
Okay. And then the next question, of course, is the one we started with, was why, then, under those circumstances, wouldn't the appropriate action be for us to send it back to the board and get the board to tell us what the board's construction and the board's understanding of the case is, the disposition of the case, rather than our trying to sort that out. That's normally an error of that sort, but it leads to sending it back for the board to make a determination as to how it would come out. You say that's not necessary here, and explain to me why.
Your Honor, we don't believe it's necessary because any further analysis by the board is essentially moot. As the patent owner acknowledges, Claim 1 is already slated for cancellation, and the patent owner to this court has not raised any arguments with respect to the dependent claims from Claim 1.
So your argument against a remand is entirely based on the combination of 1, 2, and 5 as obviating any chance of 18 surviving. Right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
I'm sorry, before you go, there's an argument that it was a new ground of rejection, what the board did with the Qiuqi Solana, by pivoting to relying on Qiuqi for the generating step. And is that true, in your view, that the examiner's rejection had relied on Solana for that limitation, but then the board itself independently chose to rely on Qiuqi?
With respect to the Solana in view of Qiuqi rejections, yes, the examiner's analysis had relied on Solana, and the board in its decision didn't say that that analysis was wrong, but it also didn't exactly put its stamp of approval on it.
Right, and it went over and relied on Qiuqi for that limitation.
Yes.
So isn't that a new ground of rejection?
I would argue it's not a new ground of rejection because the rejection of and the question of Kiyuchi's teaching of that same limitation had been part of this very same appeal with respect to the other rejections. And so there's not a new or different finding there. I think it's just
I don't remember that in the red brief. I recall your red brief seeming to make an argument that they forfeited this argument that it's a new ground of rejection because by regulation they were required to request reconsideration for any non-designated new ground of rejection made in a board decision to have it designated as a new ground, and they didn't file that request, and so therefore they're not permitted to make that argument on appeal. That was the argument I thought I saw you make.
Yes, Your Honor, and Vernetics identified in its opposing brief, in the gray brief, that the regulation we had pointed to pertained to ex parte reexaminations, and this is an inter partes reexamination.
Right. So what that means is I don't see anything in your red brief that actually makes the second alternative argument in defense of this rejection as being, in your view, not a new ground on the merits.
Yes, Your Honor. The board's analysis, right? The board didn't say what the examiner had did was wrong, but the board also didn't affirm on that affirm or adopt the examiner's analysis.
The other side has told us that all that is at stake in this appeal, in light of what happened in the March 23 Mangrove opinion, is Claim 18. And then if we were to affirm the other appeal, then that would moot the decision here on Claim 18. Do you agree with all of that?
Yes. And with respect to the questions that have come up in argument today regarding the proper next step, if the appeal is rendered moot because of invalidity findings from co-pending cases, I direct the court to cases such as Facebook versus Windy City, where there was a very similar situation, and the proper remedy was not vacatur. It was to dismiss the appellant's appeal with respect to those claims that where the questions of invalidity had been rendered moot. Substantially the same thing the court did in Intuitive Surgical versus Ethicon. That's 25 Fed 4th 1035. And then an older case that was not presidential, Securus versus Global Tellink. That's 685 Fed Appendix at 979.
What was the citation?
Citation
for the last one.
For the last one, Securus versus Global Tellink, 685.
685,
okay. Fed Appendix at 979. All right. In all of those cases, the court dismissed the appeal when the claims at issue had been rendered invalid by co-pending cases or cases that were decided during the dependency of the appeal.
I'm not sure all of our decisions have been entirely consistent in this regard.
I was not able to find any cases where the court had vacated.
But the court had vacated?
The decision below where the claims had been found unpatentable.
Because oh, I see. Okay, you're limited to that set of cases. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right.
Anything further, counsel?
No, if there are no further questions. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Tinfei has 2 minutes plus.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to clarify on the cert petition, I mean, our position is not that the cert petition somehow deprives this court's decision of its collateral estoppel effect. I mean, it... there may be a question whether the board's decision is entitled to immediate collateral effect, but certainly under Max Linear and the other cases and just general jurisprudence, this court says. Our cert petition challenges, the main issue we challenge there is whether in Mangrove the board properly joined Apple as a party to Mangrove's early filed petition. And we argue that if that joinder was statutorily improper, then the entire proceeding has to be restarted anew, which would eradicate all of the board's findings in that case. I think, on the impact of this court's in first Mangrove decision and then the board's decision in Mangrove on remand, we think that the board's analysis here is just not reconcilable with those. I think, both this court's decision but also then the board's finding on remand very clearly says that the client compute is not the same as a client-side proxy. So in addition to the board here reconsidering its decision in light of this court's guidance, we think it actually has to consider what another board panel did in Mangrove on remand, because the agency cannot come to two totally different conclusions with respect to the same, the same patent. With respect to the collateral estoppel effect from the combination of, claims 1, 2, and 5, The board's finding here was that, the board rejected our argument that there was a direct connection VPN because it found direct connection between the proxies, which we don't dispute. We think because Mangrove, this court in Mangrove, affirmed the finding of direct connection VPN disclosure on a different basis. That's why we think there's a collateral estoppel on the fundamental issue of direct connection VPN here. But it doesn't mean that the subsidiary issue, such as whether the client computer is, a client proxy or, whether it's a user agent, that there is any kind of estoppel for that. And then the last point, you know, like the, I mean, as I think, you know, my friend admitted, I mean, when the board does not adopt the examiner's rejection, does not put its own stamp on approval, I mean, that, it seems to us, by definition, a new ground of rejection, and the appropriate course of action for that is to remand to the board so the board can analyze the combination properly in light of this court's
Before you go, your second to last point that you just made on the QCHI only rejections, or QCHI and some other reference that's not Solana, my understanding was that any remaining claims like 256 others are no longer live questions for purposes of this appeal in light of what happened in the March 23 Mangrove decision. And so far, for your purposes, the only live claim left on this appeal is Claim 18 and then the QCHI Solana combination against Claim 18. Is that correct? That's what I heard you say last time.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. Because some of the claims have not been found unpatentable as a result of this court's latest affirmance in Mangrove. So then, you know, like any questions as to the validity of those claims are moot. And then there are some other claims, you know, like claims 2 and 5, which are dependent claims, but because this board invalidated those claims on the basis of finding a direct connection VPN disclosure, we think, you know, there is a collateral estoppel as to that fundamental issue, even though the basis for that finding, in our view, was incorrect. But nevertheless, that is the finding that also this court affirmed in Mangrove, right?
So could I just hear you one more time explain why if we were to affirm a rejection of claims 1, 2, and 5 under QCHI, why doesn't that necessarily render claim 18 unpatentable?
Claim 18 has a different additional limitation, and also because the rejections of those claims, one, two, and five, and the others were on the basis of QCHI, so it's an anticipation rejection, at least for independent claim one. The basis for the board's rejection of claim 18 here was an obviousness under the QCHI Solana. It's a different analysis, you under, in our view.
Okay, so even though the full consequences is a conclusion that QCHI teaches everything in claim 1, everything in claim 2, everything in claim 5, and then, you know, by logic, perhaps everything in claim 18, since they all share the same limitations. The rejection in front of us today is a QCHI Solana, not a QCHI. And so for that reason, we wouldn't be able to just straight up affirm on claim 18.
That is our view, Your Honor, and certainly because Claim 18, which is independent claim, also has that additional limitation, which is not present in the in Claim 1, which was held unpatentable.
Thank you, counsel. I think we have your arguments, and the case is submitted.
Thank you, Your Honor.
That concludes today's arguments.